Good afternoon, everyone. I'm going to call this meeting to order. And may Ray, would you rise? No, actually, I'm sorry. Would everyone rise and join us in the Pledge of Allegiance? All right, we have a quorum. Not only do we have a quorum, but we have four different shades of blue up here. Vice President Stidell also has some blue, so this is Blue Thursday. This is Blue Thursday here at the CCSD. Mr. Carmel, anything to report from closed session?
The board continued to provide instructions to its labor negotiator regarding the IAFF MOU, but there's nothing to report.
Thank you. Do we have an agenda review? Any additions or deletions? Seeing none, we'll move on to our public safety reports. And Commander Nelson?
Good afternoon, Commander Nelson with the Sheriff's Coast Station. The report for January, we had 407 calls for service in Cambria. This time last year, we had 299. We had one call for service regarding assault or battery. We had 21 calls for service regarding disturbances. Of note, we got called to the 2200 block of Burton Drive regarding a subject who was restrained from a residence and refusing to leave. Deputies arrived on scene, contacted the subject, removed the subject from the residence, and the subject was arrested for violating a restraining order and also battery. We had four calls for service regarding burglary. Of note, we received a report of approximately $7,000 in yarn stolen from a business in the 2300 block of Village Lane. Deputy on scene investigating, there were no signs forced entry, and no suspect leads at this time. We received five calls for service regarding thefts. Of note, we received a report of a fraudulent use of credit card information. It was just the information. The actual physical credit card was still in the possession of the victim. Deputies investigated that case. The loss was approximately $1,000. We were able to locate a suspect in that case, and charges are being filed with the district attorney's office for grand theft. We had five reports regarding vandalism. We had a report in the 2300 block of Leona Drive in Cambria regarding a vehicle that was keyed, causing approximately $5,000 in damage. A suspect was identified in that case and was arrested for felony vandalism. We received no reports regarding mail thefts. We received four reports regarding phone scams. One of the basic scams that was going around in January was the PG&E scam, where the caller states they're from PG&E, that money is owed, and they ask for the victim to buy access cards. It seems like Google Play cards are very popular. They ask them to purchase the cards and then give them the activation codes. In this case, the person receiving the call recognized it as a scam, and there was no loss. We received 16 calls for service regarding suspicious circumstances. Of note, we received a call of a male subject approaching and following five teenagers in the 1000 block of Main Street, so right outside this building. Deputies arrived, contacted the male subject, who ended up being on parole. They arrested him for a parole violation and then also annoying a minor under the age of 18. And that's all I have.
Thank you, Commander. Do we have any questions for Commander Nelson? I think I'd like to ask one since you talked about the calls for service going up 25% from this time last year, any particular explanation for that that you can come up with?
This question comes up a lot. So the way these stats are taken, those numbers reflect any call that comes in the sheriff's dispatch. So any call that comes in is not necessarily a sheriff's office issue. It might get transferred out to highway patrol, fire department, medical aid, whatever the case is. It's counted on that number. So it could be a variety of things. It doesn't mean it's specifically an increase in criminal activity.
So nothing really to be alarmed about?
Correct.
Thank you. All right, thank you so much. Have a pleasant weekend.
You too. Thank you.
Thank you. And now the Fire Chief's report from Mr. Hollingsworth and Chief. Before you speak, I think I speak for members of the board and staff and everyone in the audience here expressing our condolences. I know the fire departments throughout the country are a very tight-knit group, and the passing of two firefighters in Porterville is something we all know about, so our condolences. And just out of curiosity, do you have any details on that particular incident?
Not specifically any more than what you are aware of that's been released in the news. We do have an aggressive crisis intervention stress management team here in the county. It's one that other counties are trying to emulate, and it's one of the many ancillary things that the other chiefs all participated in. I happen to be the coordinator for this county, and we've already had people reach out and looking for assistance for that. So just as in when we had the big floods that occurred down in Montecito or other areas, not only do we provide automatic and mutual aid with resources on our end operationally, but we respond in the same capacity to send people that are qualified and trained to deal with the first responders when they're having psychological or emotional breakdowns secondary to the significant kind of trauma they seek. So it's always impressive to me to the level of commitment and training people are willing to take above and beyond just what we normally do in regards to fires and vehicle accidents and medical aids and all that kind of stuff, because they truly want to help their fellow firefighter. And that's absolutely the case. So, yeah, everybody's a little bit devastated right now. And obviously, with it being as close as to where we are, it's a relatively small-knit community, and many of the people that live and work here are familiar with the people that work there. So we appreciate that. For the month of January, we had 105 emergency responses. If you look historically, again, just like the fire department, we are trending on an increase in regards to call volume. I want to bring it to your attention. There's two documents before you. One is the traditional one that you see, and there's another version of this which has been added to your packet this month. I am proposing that, if you're willing to allow me to do so, that we change to this new format. It's the same information you're getting. However, it more specifically reflects and chronologically reflects the information that I pull out of our new reporting system that we utilize. It's called Image Trends. And so it specifically breaks down by the National Fire Incident Reporting System. There are specific categories. There's orders in which this stuff is presented to them that we have to report on quarterly. And this is a more accurate breakdown of what it is that we do. There are literally hundreds of more categories, and we could be that much more specific. But unless you live and work in an area where you're running 5,000 or 10,000 calls a year, like LA City or San Francisco, that would be a little bit redundant and more than what we need. So what I've done is I've identified the primary areas of service that you will see that we historically have. Additionally, with the new software we have, we are capturing an enormous amount of additional data, which I think is imperative for both you and the community to understand. Everything from not only call volume, but breaking down calls by the time of day, day of week, areas of the community. Are we serving local or non-local residents? What kind of automatic aid, mutual aid are we giving and then receiving? And my goal, once we have some of those things more done, we're writing the protocols within the system right now, is to enhance that, and you're going to be getting an additional piece of paper that goes with this, if not more, that breaks out that kind of information. So you have a better and more clear understanding of the kind of service we provide. I think that's imperative that we give that to you. And with your permission, I'm going to go ahead and start doing that in the months that come forward. I typically don't report on things that happened this month. However, I did want to say that there was a fire the other night that happened just about a week ago here during the month of February. It was a vehicle fire over in Lodge Hill. And I just want to say thank you to my crew that responded to that. Very quick response. Was quickly able to jump on that. It was a vehicle fire. The car was fully involved and destroyed. However, with anywhere in this community, there was an enormous amount of trees, canopy, exposures to buildings. There was no ancillary damage that came out of that, and that was because of the quick work of that crew. That was Captain McCrane, Engineer Castellanos, and Firefighter Caleb Adrani. So they did a fantastic job, and I just want to recognize what they did. There are a quick update on the grants that we still have two that are pending that are on hold right now that we have not received any information about funding from the state. State basically regulates this, and it is funded through federal money for FEMA. And whenever they start running low, they just cut it off. And then they put everybody in a holding pattern depending on what happens. So we have two that are approved but pending. We just got the notice for the next opening of both the AFG grant and then also the SAFER grant. We don't know how those are formulated this year, but as soon as we understand what their focus is, we'll be reporting on that to seek direction to possibly apply for whether it is equipment or services or however we could best suit the community. And then lastly, as you know, we cooperatively joined with the CCHD, the healthcare district, a couple of years ago, and in 17 authorized the multi-jurisdictional hazard mitigation plan. Part of that plan is what makes us eligible to apply for these grants. Otherwise, if we didn't have this in place, HMGP, the state funding would not come through. We have to have this there. A component of that is that we meet annually and review that, and then every 5 years do a thorough review. It is time for the annual meeting. I've already put a request out to members of our administration, which would include our general manager, the administrator on the healthcare district side. I've clarified which of their board members would like to participate. And I'd just like to ask the question to the board as a whole. Historically, Director Pearson has been the one that has helped out in that regard. I invite anybody that's willing to take on that role. I know that he is willing to do so, but we do need participation, so I believe that direction would ultimately need to be a consensus agreement with the board before I can move forward with actually setting up that meeting. And that's all I have for you today.
Yes, Director Rice, did you wish to make a comment?
Yes, please. I appreciate the new format, especially if it makes it easier since you're doing reporting with this format already. Might be helpful to just put a little asterisk noting what NFIRS is.
Will do.
Because those of us who are not in the fire department may not just automatically know. The other thing I'd caution is sometimes when we start collecting data, we don't know why we're collecting it, what we're going to do with it, and I would caution against not using these as metrics we're trying to meet, i.e. quotas, or some kind of measure as to how much money the fire department should get based on incidents, because this is a compilation of information of what's happened in the past, but not necessarily predictive. So I just want to make sure that we're all really clear what this information is going to do. The other thing I noticed is that we did have a reporting for in-county and out-of-county, and I'm hoping that that is going to continue.
It absolutely will continue. We did not have that information readily available when this was created, and it is something that would be going on the second page of what my document would have. So it, in the past, when you'll notice that the first document, it would say data pending up on the top. That's solely because we didn't have it available at the time to report. But as soon as we do, it'll be included on that.
Well, and I think that the original purpose the board had in asking about that was to see how much of our service that we provide is provided to tourists, so that we can keep track of whether that's having an impact on and services that we're able to provide to afford to provide. So just want to keep that all. The purpose is important for why we're keeping the data.
Thank you. Any further questions or comments? Yes, Director Howell.
I just wanted to say that I do like the new format, and the additional information that's on there is very useful, so please do keep that one up.
Thank you.
Well, seeing no further comments, thank you, Chief. Have a pleasant weekend.
Thank you.
You bet. Moving on to public comment, I have one request to speak. And that is from Elizabeth Bettenhausen.
Thank you, Mr. County bus, so that I could stroll here on their vehicle. And it occurred to me as I was walking there along Windsor to think about a haiku. And this is the haiku I wrote walking along Windsor for public comment now. Climate crisis grows from an ancient stump. Humans feed and feed daily. I will read that again. Climate crisis grows from an ancient stump. Humans feed and feed daily. Thank you.
Thank you. Did you wish to elaborate on that? You still have time.
At your request, I humbly comply. I watched some of the debate last night. I won't talk about that. And I was at school, so I couldn't listen to Governor Newsom. But I was made aware today via my connections on Google that the governor of our state didn't really mention climate crisis in his State of the Union. Now, I certainly understand that the man is burdened with much to do and has not enough time to talk about everything about which he's concerned. But I thought about that and hoped that here in town, we have many people who are considering climate crisis in every aspect, because it's not approaching, it is here. And when you go to the beach, you will begin to see the effects of the climate crisis. You will see a mortality of birds, which is stunning. You will see an erosion of cliffs, which if you don't believe exist, I will document for you with my photographs. You will see an intrusion of all manner of animals who didn't live here before and are coming up from the south because it's warm here now, and that's what they're used to. But my line that humans feed and feed this stump daily refers to human responsibility for creating the dilemma that now confronts us. The dilemma is quite simple. Give up, sacrifice, change, or die. That's it. Give up, sacrifice, change, or die. That's it.
Thank you, Ms. Bettenhausen. If I could just, well, in my president's report, I'll make some comments on the weather as well.
Mr. President,
Director Rice.
I received an email that I would just like to read that's an issue that I think I've heard more than once. And it was sent to myself and Director Howell, I believe, because this person knows both of us. So on Sunday at 6:15, he tried to call the CCSD number provided on the website where it says it'll be answered 24/7. It rang 15 times before I hung up. Four of my neighbors tried to call yesterday, meaning Monday, and none of us could get through. Also, one neighbor somehow found the board email addresses and said that only one, for Harry, worked. The other emails were rejected as not deliverable. I couldn't even find them on the webpage. Someone at CCSD, that's an opinion I'm not going to express, but somebody needs to be responsible for this. Whose responsibility is it for the web page? And I thought we had an answering service for the days when the office is closed, but, I mean, he did try and get through, and he actually called me because he had a leak on his street and couldn't get through to anybody at the office or the answering service or anything. So I don't know if that's just was a temporary one-time event over this past weekend or if that's something that we need to address, but if we could please have the GM look into it, that would be great.
Yeah, before I comment on what Director Rice said, General Manager Weigel, did you wish to make a comment or perhaps Sister Clerk Madrid?
Yes, Mr. President, we had an issue with the phone system over the weekend, concurrent with the leak. We did get word on the leak. The person that tried the telephone went to our other way to contact us, was just through the website, and so we got the email and responded through that. But we did attack that for, I don't know how many hours, probably 5 or 6 hours on Saturday to get a temporary fix to get us through the weekend. And then an engineer, software engineer with our Avaya vendor worked further this week up until yesterday, rewriting software code to fix an issue through their system. So it was not an issue of just simply forgetting to forward phones. It was much more complicated. So we worked a number of workarounds through that period, and so things are back up now, as I understand things.
All right. I just want to make this comment. Director Rice, I believe she's talking about the incident of this past Saturday. And Director Rice had gotten the phone call that she alluded to with regard to there being an emergency, being a leak at the top of Cardiff. And she called me to see if I could contact someone. So I immediately called Adam, who was the on-call person for the weekend in the water department. And he was already on site and had contacted Chief Plant Operator Jim Green. And they were out there as quickly as possible and took care of the situation. But I appreciated Director Rice giving me a call, so thank you.
I wasn't able to get a hold of General Manager Weigold. That's who I called first, because that's who I should call first. So when I couldn't get a hold of him, and I don't have my phone list on me at all times, and I was not at home. So thank you for taking care of that.
Not a problem. You know, before I move forward, Adolph? From the PROS Commission, I see him out in the audience. Steve Niffen gave the PROS report last week. Are you here for something different?
That's what I was here for. I got a message,
an email. Okay. I'm sorry, I can't quite hear you.
I got the message in the email, but I read the email today. I guess you covered it last week. That's fine.
Okay. All right. Thank you. All right, moving on, there's no further public comment, and we'll move on to item 4A and the general manager's report.
Yes, Mr. President, I put the pretty detailed report together. I don't have an awful lot to update since this hit the street, but I do want to note that we will have our first meeting with PG&E for the energy efficiency upgrade program. They'll start their internal assessment with us and our systems on the 27th with a kickoff meeting. Additionally, we're making some really big strides in our internal processes. I wanted to highlight one is with our agenda process, which we use currently solely basically to post on the internet. We're going to use this more of its functionality, which will include the drafting of all the agenda items and all the reporting structure, so that it moves automatically from individual to individual in the approval process and review process, which will cut down on literally hundreds of emails that are exchanged internal to the staff and some of you as well. So as we move along, there are actually modules for board use in there, not only for viewing the agenda during the meetings, but also includes the ability to take notes alongside those agenda items during your review process, as well as follow on for meetings. And those are archived for your purpose only in your own sign-in. So more to follow on that. We have to work with our district council to understand how we do training not to impact the Brown Act. So also in the area of facilities, we have had an increase lately in the last couple of weeks on homeless encampments. Probably one of the ones most visible is the pocket park at on Bridge Street, and so that was cleaned up this week, and so we're staying on top of that. I think through the year last year we had something about 60 some odd camps that we cleared last year total. So it was quite a number. And that, unless there are further questions, that concludes my report.
Before I go to the board to see if they have any questions or comments, I want to express my embarrassment because you know, sometimes there's a large pile here of public requests, requests to speak, and I'll overlook one. Today there are only three, and yet I overlooked Ms. Bettenhausen wishing to make a comment on the general manager's report. So, Ms. Bettenhausen.
Thank you, Mr. President. Having just heard the general manager give an oral interpretation of his report, I want to comment that one of the new general manager's distinctive characteristics is metaphor and images. And I have never before, until this very day, 2-2-2-2020, thought of the general manager's report hitting the street. So I thank you, general manager. It's a diversity of language, which we desperately need. Here. I have two comments to make about the general manager's report. One has two parts. First, I want to thank the general manager. I emailed him on the 16th of February, as you know, because I copied you in, regarding the water reports on the website, and it's not in your agenda listed. So I'm very glad 2 days later to have heard from General Manager Weigold with an update, and there are now three reports on the website so we can follow along. I do have a continuing question, though, and I have posed this to him, but I will just mention it to you because I think it has sort of a policy issue embedded in it somewhere. And that is on the water well levels report, there is a well 21R3. Do you know it? Well, I didn't pay any attention to it either. And I started looking. There are some interesting reports there every month to the tune of, like, this most recent one of 2-3-2020. Meter read 42,895 units. I have not the vaguest idea what that means. But the general manager was kind enough to tell me that it's a slow county well that we're kindly reading and maybe will benefit from in the future. But now it occurs to me, and thanks to a conversation I had with a friend, is that the well that serves since Shamel Park for potable water? Potable water, I mean, not potable. So I'd really like, I've posed this to the general manager, and I expect some efficient response, as he certainly has given me. I want to point you to page 8 of the report, and there it's about the SWF, so-called. And it says, of course, that they're making progress on the CDP. I think that's a very interesting statement. It gets less interesting as I read it again and again and again, as I do. And I have no specificity of any of the progress. I don't know what progress they're making. But I do note on page 19, the deadline to respond to the RFP, RFQ for the Water Resources Management team was extended to February 14, 2020. Responses to requests, et cetera. Now, apparently they didn't get enough responses to make a decision by the initial date of January 31. I'd like an update because the CDP for the SWF is also related to the Urban Water Management Plan. And I would like an update, not simply today. I would like an update at every single board meeting on the progress being made on this CDP application after lo, these many years, to the tune of half a decade. 5 years we've been reading this in the agendas. At least maybe change the print color or put a little flower in the edge or something to make it more interesting. I took up more time than I was due. Thank you very much, Mr. President.
You're welcome. Thank you. Right, moving forward, I guess I could ask General Manager Weigel, did you wish to make any comments on Ms. Elizabeth's remarks?
Yeah, on that, well, that's well 21R3, which she's referring to, which is a county-maintained well that was previously used to measure seawater intrusion. Those in 1990, we had two additional wells that came into service that we used. So even though that other, the SR21R3 isn't owned by us, we still measure it just to have some data, historic data. It's close to the lagoon. It's not potable water well, and so we're just using it for potential data in the future. Other than that, there's no use and for it. As far as the CDP progress goes, we're at the point where we are, as the ad hoc has been involved, working with the various regulatory groups that are all going to have something to say about our application. And so rather than to submit it and get it returned four different times, we're coordinating on the front end to ensure that the expectations are met the first time we submit it. So there's a lot of staff work on that. And so that's really, what's happening, behind the scenes right now. It's to throw out another acronym for Dr. Bettenhausen, it's what I would call the sausage making. It's not very exciting, but we're doing a lot of that work behind the scenes and having some face-to-face meetings when needed. And with our new district engineer, utility manager on board, he's doing a bit of relationship building as we go along, because that's super important in the process.
All right. When you said sausage making, I immediately thought of Upton Sinclair and his book, The Jungle. So hopefully things aren't quite as convoluted here at the district as they were in that book. Moving on to, yes, Director Howell.
Just a question. On page 8, at the bottom of the page, the regulatory compliance. No, not that one. Middle of the page. Could you give me some, you say working closely with the health district and the school district. Can you give some examples of the kinds of things that you're looking at? Just to expand a little bit.
Sure. So each time we get together, we identify potential ways that we may leverage one another. And this comes from simply spending more time together. So this started as a board president and general manager of each of the three organizations getting together. But then the general managers recognized that there's more to be done and that we're individually going to get together separately from our district board presidents. And so a couple of things we're working on. For example, the healthcare district right now has a need for a bookkeeper/clerk. They need that person 8 hours a day. It's really difficult to find somebody with those kind of qualifications for that minimum number of hours. And so he called and asked if somehow that role might be rolled into a dual role with something that we need. I have a part-time front desk clerk that the board has approved that I'm still holding out on, because I have some other ideas on how I might want to utilize that person. But there's an example where we could potentially hire someone that meets our needs for some hours, but also meets the healthcare district for some hours, and we can, what I would call, bolt those two components together to create a larger job for somebody that they wouldn't necessarily be interested in if it was two separate jobs and too small each.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you, Director Rice.
I do appreciate the manager's report. I would like to have more of a status and not just these are the things that I'm working on. I'm glad Director Howell asked about what is it that you're focusing on with the two different districts and us. it might also be helpful considering how detailed this community likes to get. I know we do have a list of the compliance reports for the regulatory compliance in the water and wastewater manager's reports, perhaps moving that down into the into that section might be helpful, or listing here what reports were due that got submitted. And the last comment that I want to make on this part of the general manager's report is alternative energy is not about changing to LED bulbs and putting in stations. It's about using power that is not generated by fossil fuels and is more environmentally climate friendly. So I just want to caution us that we don't use alternative energy when really what we mean is energy efficiency, because I think that is an important thing to be focused on, but we also should be looking at whether we should have solar lights for our streetlights instead of LEDs. That would be, I would consider that to be alternative energy versus energy efficiency. There's ways to save money, and there's ways to save on the kind of power that we don't want to be continuing to use. We're lucky in this county in that we have the nuclear power plant. We're also unlucky in that we have the nuclear power plant providing most of our power. So those are the comments that I have on that section. Thank you.
No problem. General Manager Weigel, did you wish to make a comment? I will just remark that with regard to the street lighting, this has actually become an item that is being discussed and will be on next month's agenda with regard to streetlights here in the community. And we'll be addressing that. And so thank you, Director Rice, for bringing that up. I'd also like to mention, since you brought up Diablo Canyon Nuclear Power Plant, not that I'm any expert on it, but we really, as far as I know, don't get any power here in our county. All of the power from the nuclear power plant at Diablo Canyon goes south to Southern California. That's what I remember from many years ago. Moving on to item 4B and the finance manager's report. Ms. Duffield.
Thank you, President Palmer, members of the board. I just want to give you a little more update since the writing of this report on the new financial system upgrade. In my report, I noted that Tyler Technology Consultant for Utility Billing was going to be on site this week. She has been on site with us for 3 days, and she's been pouring through our current processes of everything we do head-to-toe for utility billing. It's been a much bigger endeavor than I had anticipated having her on site for 3 days, but I think it's been very informative and has made us evaluate our processes a little more, kind of mirroring how we would do those processes in the new system, gaining some efficiencies. And of course, we have some homework to do after the fact and provide her some more data out of our system. We did provide quite a lot of data and screenshots of things that we do, but we still have a lot of questions to answer. So that will continue over the next month. And then the middle of March, we're scheduled to have a gentleman come to us and do the same thing on the rest of our system, which is our general ledger, our basic financials, our payroll system, and our accounts payable system. And so there are some timing questions with him on when he's going to be here in March, but we're still hopeful that that does happen. If not, that would be moved into an April date. And then on the audit, I'm still working with the external auditor, Mr. Bruner, to make some final changes on the draft report that he's prepared. And as soon as those changes are finalized and he's happy and I'm happy with that final report, then we will get it scheduled for the Finance Committee meeting. We'll probably have to do a special meeting for that, and then we will get it on to the next available board meeting as well. So I can answer any questions if you have them.
Thank you. Any questions for Ms. Duffield? Yes, Vice President Steidel.
It isn't so much a question as an observation that the idea that it's may take a little bit longer in going through the review of process and application, with the new system, because it's a very common situation that occurs when you've got a new system that you're working with, the taking the best advantage of the new product that you're moving to and realigning processes rather than trying to replicate a current process within that. So actually, what you've relayed to us in that kind of a realignment going on is very beneficial, and I'm very happy to hear.
Yes, it was simply, you know, one of the conversations we had yesterday is, are we going to continue to print a customer receipt out in a full page 8.5 by 11, or are we going to convert to their little printer? And I'm just like, wow, I don't know. I guess we have to think about that. We have to talk about it. How much does it cost? Give us a quote. Right. You know, just like those kinds of conversations where we're trying to explain to her our current process, and then she tries to explain to us how that could change in Tyler. Of course, I think we're going to gain a lot of efficiencies, but it's just those lengthy conversations that happen that really were very informative to us. Yes, very much informative.
Thank you.
Director Rice.
I concur 100% with Vice President Steidel's assessment of that. And as you may already be aware, the city of Paso Robles did change their billing system for their utility billing recently and implemented sometime in November. So you may be able to reach out to them and see if they have any helpful hints for what happened with their process. Don't know. Might be possibly a helpful thing. And as my comments today probably are making lots more people aware, I'm a little bit more involved in taking care of what I need to do for being informed for these meetings. And the CCSD director meetings compensation is good because I think transparency is important. It's a little confusing, though, when it says for the month of January, meaning that's when the checks went out. But it also says $600 a month, but there were 2 months paid for Director Howell. I am a fine example of somebody who turns in more than 1 month at a time because I get behind. So I don't want to specifically say that that's just a one-off. But it does make it somewhat confusing when it says $600 a month and then there's $1,000 there and then there's... So I just curious as to the purpose of having this part of the of your report in here, and if it might be if it's for informational purposes, that's great. But I think the point is more to be clear about how many meetings we're attending, and I don't know. It just seemed confusing to me. That's all.
So the reason that I added that additional column of meeting month is because I thought it would be more confusing if everybody sees that we paid one director more than $600, you know, there would be a question there. So I wanted to make it clear on that we were paying no more than $600 per month, but it was crossing two different months. And this is just simply a reporting of what we paid to each director during mm-hmm. that given month that we're reporting on. So we're reporting on the month of January 2020's activity.
Okay, so the checks that went out in
correct.
January. Okay, thank you for that clarification. Might be helpful to just have a sentence at the very beginning that says paid during January or something. I know it's redundant seeming, but it just might be helpful, I think, for those of us who are financially...
General Manager Weigel, do you wish to make a comment?
Yes, Mr. President. You know, in thinking about this chart the way we have it organized, we list the maximum number, only the maximum number of meetings that you're able to be compensated for, but I'd say every one of you is attending at least 2 to 3 times minimally more than six meetings a month. Is there any interest in depicting for the public the true number of meetings you're attending?
Yes, Vice President Steidel.
Speaking personally, I just soon keep it the way it is, the idea of listing out every meeting that I go to. I don't know that it adds any value. Frankly, when I fill out the time card, I fill it out until I've reached my limit. I total it out, and I give you the slip.
It would just reduce your average hourly rate is all.
Yeah, I would just say I think most of us attend more than 6 meetings a month, and I know this. I'm speaking for everyone on the board. I think we're all grateful to be able to serve this community, and if that means that we're doing more work than we're supposedly actually getting paid for, I think we knew that was going to be part of the obligation when we ran for office in the first place. So it's not really a big deal. And personally, I'm grateful to be able to have that money to help pay my rent. Thank you. And I know that Director Rice feels the same way. Thank you. That's not to comment on the other folks on the board, but they're doing a little better than the two of us. All right, moving on to item 4C in the utilities report before Mr. D'Enzo gets up to speak. I have a request to speak. And yeah, from Elizabeth Bettenhausen.
Thank you, Mr. President. I try to show up at least every other month to get my little comments made. And I might not make any more today, but I might be inspired and add some. I want to speak again to what I raised before. Page 19, utility report, quote, the deadline to respond to the RFP-RFQ for the Water Resources Management Team was extended to February 14, 2020. Responses to a request for information were posted to the page on the website. Actually, that's I don't know why they do that in some ways, but I'm glad they do. I asked the question again. Since this team has been described to us public as integral to the application for the coastal development permit for the SWF and integral to the Urban Water Management Plan 2020 report, what has happened with hiring the team? That was my question before, and Mr. Weigel, just incidentally, happened not to answer that one. My second question about the utilities report is on page 18, sustainable water facility, and I note in the other expenditure reports and all that the new tanks have cost around $80,000, but that's probably cheaper in the long run, certainly, than the rental fees were, but I don't want to talk about that in detail. I want to point to the second paragraph under the sustainable water facility paragraph heading. Quote, a representative from H2O Innovations dropped by the SWF to meet staff and to prepare for system maintenance and run-in-place operations, end quotation. Now, I would like to know, and others have asked this question over the past months repeatedly, and so now it's my turn. When is this plant turned on, and why? That's all I want to know. When is it turned on, and why? If it's for run-in-place operation, I assume that's not like hitting the street with the GM report. I'm sorry, Mr. Weigold, I had to take that on once again as a phrase. I like it. But what does it mean that we are sitting there with this system maintenance issue? What does that entail? And what are we paying for when we are paying for what hasn't happened or has it happened and we haven't been told? That is, run-in-place operations test most recently. What's going on here, friends? Please tell us. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Bettenhausen. Yes, General Manager Weigel.
So I apologize. I didn't attack the issue on the consultant. We had extended the deadline on the RFQ, RFP, because we only had one response. And we'll see who's at the door.
So that reminds me of, was it the Beatles song? But this, she came in through the back room doors as opposed to the back room window. But nevertheless, pardon me for the interruption.
So we had only one response to our RFP, RFQ, so we extended the deadline, and the utility manager, district engineer, just reviewed that in the last 24 hours. I'll let him address that in the in his report. And as it relates to the sustainable water facility, when I came on board and started getting a tour, asking questions about that, I learned that we didn't really have a clear maintenance, long-term maintenance program as outlined by the people that installed the equipment. So it's taken some time, but we have a program now, and so along with the program comes training. So I'll allow the utility manager to talk about that a little bit too, but we're on the early stages of now implementing our maintenance program. And then lastly, on the tanks, so we were budgeted by the board to spend $80,000 on those tanks, but thanks to our entrepreneurial water supervisor, Jim Green, he found tanks for, I think, $18,000. And so massive savings, and that included delivery and installation. So pretty exciting for us, you know, on the user side. And I'll let the engineer talk about that a little bit as well.
All right. Keep you on your toes.
Welcome. Yeah.
Good afternoon again, Mr. Farmer, President Farmer, and the board. Again, I'm Ray D'Anso, Utilities Manager, and I'm pleased to present this report for activities that happened during January of 2020. To answer first off those two questions, the Urban Water Management Plan team, we do have a good consultant team that has submitted, and I think I'm going to be recommending that we hire them. With that, I'm not going to say who they are because they haven't been officially hired, but there's going to be contract negotiations in the next couple of days and things like that. And definitely I need to also run the recommendation by the Resource and Infrastructure Committee. So that's going to be in the next few days. Okay. Regarding the SWF, just to be more specific, because the system hasn't run in a long time, there's always danger of biological fouling in the filters, and the clean in place needs to happen. And because we need to just do a complete audit of the system, since it hasn't been run consistently, actually not even for like years. So we need to run that clean in place. And we do have that scheduled for next month. The consultant that came last month did an assessment on what needs to happen, went over options on what kind of maintenance program we need to be on, because, to answer the question, that system can only run when a stage 3 drought is declared. So it's meant to be very limited use as it is. So because of that, the maintenance schedule is going to be different than most maintenance schedules for most of these types of plants, since it's not running continuously. Whereas, you know, when you run something continuously, there's a clean-in-place cycle that happens during the operation. So I can answer more questions about that if you have any. But as far as the report for activities in January, I hope the theme of this report would be good operation and maintenance opportunities. And I wish in the future that most of my reports are like this, because we're moving away from corrective maintenance to more preventative maintenance. So, and I attribute that to good upgrades that have been done recently, good tools provided, and good training provided. And I highlight the effectiveness of our crew, professional crew, and I think it's a token to also a good leadership that starts from you folks. So I'm glad that I walked into a good place. So So as far as the training that happened last month, all of the operators did some utility locating training. This needs to happen once a year. This protects the district because it hones in the skills of the operators to locate the utilities, you know, specifically sewer and water facilities, when construction or any excavation takes place. And these new methods that we're using protects the district from any liabilities during construction. So moving forward with that, specifically a report on the wastewater treatment plant, one thing I want to highlight is there wasn't any major emergencies that happened last month. But I do want to highlight that it was the one-year anniversary of the influence screen upgrade, and we want to make mention of that because these are the kind of things that what would have happened. I would have been given a report of things that would have happened if had we not done it. So just to give you some fun facts, 14,600 pounds of debris was filtered out last year. That's a lot. And what does that mean? Well, that means that the pumps, huge pumps, two types of pumps, three types of pumps in the aerator basin were not cleaned anymore. So typically, that was a monthly rag removal maintenance that needed to be done. And if you saw where these pumps were located, you would, oh, man, I don't want to do that. And it's an effort that three operators have to do, and these pumps are very heavy, and it's very, and you need the Vactor truck to be able to clean it out. Also, a smaller pump within the aerator basin used to need cleaning three times a week, and a pump replaced every 4 months. Now it needs to be cleaned only every 2 months, and now we had we only replaced it once a year. And also, the effluent pumps are cleaner. So you know, all of these things, very significant upgrade that was done, but the ramifications were great. So I hope that y'all can appreciate that. Relating to the wastewater treatment plant upgrades, the PG&E SST process is moving along. We do have a meeting with PG&E, a big startup meeting next week. Regarding the collection system, we do have, I hope to be able to present next month a new hire for that. I think we were able to hire someone for collection system maintenance. Cautiously optimistic, hopefully that hiring process moves on. Also in the water side, as I mentioned before, some good tools that were provided. We have a GIS program that our operators are now able to locate meters and other facilities, valves and pipes and all of those things. Last month we were able to locate 400 meters. You know, how can you not know where the meters are? Well, some of these meters get buried and things like that. And so this GIS program, they were able to locate them and find them. So it gives them good opportunity, especially now for the meter upgrade that we're going to do pretty soon. We're continuing to upgrade instead of, you know, fix any problem services in the past. And also we're continuing to upgrade some of the air vac devices. These devices are valves that are usually placed during high points of a system so that it allows the air to move through. These air vacs have been replaced because of what we call the Cambria cancer, where the moistness of the air and the sea, the salinity content, you know, it rusts really quickly. But now we're replacing them with some valves or air vac valves that, with improved technology, that resists corrosion and are smaller and lighter. So we're starting to do that. Again, it's just more maintenance stuff. And I already talked about the two Baker tanks that were installed. And I do want to highlight, I'm glad that we are doing, I wish I can take credit for this, but we've already started doing it, about showing the conservation and permits process. It provides good visibility and awareness, good communication, so I'm glad we're doing that. Relating to the water conservation effort, we have completed our access database setup that now we have the retrofits point bank in a good place where we can now start populating it. Forms from 2014 or up are going to be reviewed, and now the process is now putting them into the database. But I do want to highlight some good collaboration with the realtors in town and even some of the inspectors in town that we hope to coordinate with. And we're also going to be coordinating with the Coastal Commission with this because we want to be sure that we're on the right track regarding any issues that they would have regarding water conservation and demand and things like that. And we hope to meet with them next week, and I hope to be able to present on that next month. And also, in the report, I want to highlight that the conservation effort, you know, there's going to be, the database is going to be presented in a visual format so that it's easier to follow, easier to visualize. So that's there for you. And last thing I want to highlight is we have the well level and production data that is available, online. I didn't print it this time. This was a decision that I made because those do get updated up the day of. And so, but it is available online, but it is available to be printed out if the community wants to do so. And the one thing I do want to say about the well levels is that we are tracking on average. I hope, though, that it rains this Saturday, which I think it's forecasted to, so hopefully those well levels will improve. So, but that's all I have for this report, but I'm available for questions.
Director Rice.
Just a few. First, compliment. Thank you. Excellent information. I appreciate it. 14,000 pounds of debris also means people are flushing things they should not be flushing. So maybe a little reminder to the community, don't be flushing your wipes and other things that shouldn't be flushed in the toilet. It's for biologicals and toilet paper and not a lot of other stuff, because all of, as is clear in this report, it was causing us a great deal of expense that people do that. We're all part of the community. It all goes there. We need to try and reduce that. Several years back, we had a plan to video 20% of the collection system each year. I hope that's on your agenda of things to do once we've got somebody on board. I appreciate that you're getting somebody on board. On the sustainable water facility, I just want to get some additional clarity. It's a question that Elizabeth Bettenhausen asked, and a question I had a question mark in here. So the run-in-place operation might be also called clean-in-place. Is that about cleaning the membranes in place, the run-in-place operation?
Yes, yes. It's the operation.
Okay.
And so just to be clear on that, clean in place is a general term where in a normal cycle, there mm-hmm. is a clean in place cycle at typical membrane type facilities. Yeah.
Okay. And then, and just as a matter of when we, a meeting I attended at the Regional Water Board, when we were dealing with how to deal with the boron that was in the pond, they mentioned that there's a potential for having the membranes removed and stored somewhere, and if we're not using it all the time, that might be a better way of approaching it. But I don't know what our current membrane situation is or what the cost would be for the difference in operation, or if it's even possible where we're at.
This is a very good question, and I'm glad that it's asked and I'm able to explain, because what we want to avoid is when we operate specifically the RO filters, what I'm going to talk about, because there is a we use a substance called Preservol to help with the biological fouling. But if you keep it in place like that for long periods of time, the lifetime of those would be maybe 6 months, 8 months. Whereas what we're planning on doing is that we want to store them as long as we can. And when a stage 3 drought is initiated, we can install them, and you know those installation can happen in a day. So, and I don't think a drought's going to sneak up on us in a day. I hope not. So, yeah.
needs you. And then I would just like to suggest to the board that we may like to consider whether it's appropriate to be approving will serves for additions that include a bedroom and a bathroom. I could build a one-bedroom, one-bath house if I'm on the wait list, but I can't until the wait list can be served. But this person who already has a meter built an extra bedroom and bathroom. And I understand that, you know, retrofit points are used and all of that, but it seems to me that when additional fixtures are involved that might increase the demand from that particular water meter, that maybe that's something we need to review, whether the board needs to look at it. And it may be that the board doesn't need to look at it, but it was just something that it triggered a thought when I saw it. And I'm assuming that the retrofit inspections are retrofit on resale?
Yes.
And then the Dow Ocean wastewater connection, I think they were on septic before. Are they connecting to the wastewater system now? Yes. To ours? Okay, so a new customer. Woo-hoo. At least for wastewater. Thank you for your report.
Director Pearson.
Would you please make sure that the board is invited to participate in the when you do the run in place?
Cause oh yeah, absolutely.
Personally, I would like to be there and see what happens.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay,
yes.
Thanks.
Director Howell.
Brief question. You mentioned H2O Innovations. That name is new to me. Maybe I missed it before. Could you talk a little bit about that?
They are the firm that installed the system that we have there right now. So that's who they are.
How does that relate to CDM Smith?
Oh no, the CDM Smith was the designer. Yeah. They are the designer. These are essentially the operator consultants. Yeah.
Thank you.
I'm sorry.
No problem. Yeah. I'm just trying to, yeah, thanks.
Excuse me, Ray. I'd just like to ask you, I'm just kind of breaking format here, but I'm looking at the expenditure report and the consent agenda where it references EKI, environment, and water. That's not the same people, is it?
I'm afraid I'm blanking. Yeah.
So, okay.
Yeah.
I'll ask about that at the consent agenda. And let's... Yes.
They are the expert witness.
Pardon me?
They are an expert witness in this CDM litigation.
Okay. Thank you. All right. So any further? Well, I think Ray, you are just a popular guy. Vice President Stidell.
Thank you. The hookup for Dow, how much infrastructure requirement is that for that hookup to be able to happen?
So they are providing all the infrastructure. They essentially have to build a force main all the way from their system, which was an old septic system, to our last manhole there on Moonstone Beach.
And is that something that they would be contracting with someone to do, or would we be using our resources to?
They would be the ones doing the construction, but we will definitely... We've already met with them on site about how we want things to be connecting. So yes, we will be involved with overseeing that.
Seeing no further comments from the board, Ray, thank you so much for a very complete report. I just want to make a comment following up on what Director Rice said with regard to everything that's being collected by the influence screen, which obviously is saving time and money over at the wastewater plant. And she kind of alluded to, well, what is actually being captured that people are just tossing in their toilet without really using any good judgment and common sense? I know this is going to sound really strange, but since that's having to be pulled out of the influence screen, perhaps next time you make a report, you could let us know what some of that is. Not that we could have a good laugh. Hold on. Wait a minute. Not that we would have a good laugh, but to make people aware, hopefully people that are doing something really stupid might also be watching this meeting on TV and or whatever, and maybe they'll say, oh, you know what? That's me. I mean, do you understand what I'm saying?
Yes, I do. I do.
So I just appreciate that. And I appreciate Ms. Bettenhausen as well, kind of following up on that, as well as Director Rice. So hopefully I don't seem out of line on that, but making people more aware of what they shouldn't be doing is probably of value.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. There's a fine line between that and too much information, but yes.
I understand. Well, you know, Ray, we'll leave that up to you and your good judgment. Thank you. All right. Moving on. I think we're finished with the utilities report and moving on to board member committee and liaison reports. And the first one is the president's report. I'll try to keep this as brief as possible. That's probably not going to be able to do that. I do want to mention Mr. D'Anzo just commented on the fact a week from today is going to be the kickoff meeting between CCSD and PG&E regarding the investment grade audit and the pursuit of the major repairs and upgrades that are going to be taking place at the wastewater plant. I also want to mention that sometime in March, there's going to be another meeting between staff and board members of the San Simeon and Cambria CSDs at the office of Supervisor Bruce Gibson. There's also going to be staff from the state and regional water boards in attendance. And, of course, we're going to be discussing the partnership between Cambria and San Simeon regarding the potential construction of a regional wastewater facility and the potential pipeline that will run between Cambria and San Simeon. Also, I just want to make a comment with regard to the current ongoing rate increase that I know still has people very concerned, and, you know, legitimately so. I just want to make a comment that the Vactor trucks that were purchased for both the water department last year and very recently for the, and there are two different water trucks. One is for water, one's for wastewater. They can't be used. I mean, we need two different ones. Both of these Vactor trucks, which we were able to purchase due to the rate increase, have been used to save time and money among staff and among your finances, and that includes the emergency incident this past Saturday up on Cardiff. So I just wanted to let people know that are concerned about where their monies are going, that their monies are being used to be very helpful with regard to what's going on there out in the streets and at the wastewater plant. Also, I noticed on social media, which, you know, occasionally comes, I get an email and somebody's making a comment, and I saw recently someone asked, well, how much rain have we had this past year so far? And a few people answered probably about 10 and a half inches. So at my place, it's been a little over 11 inches. But here's the thing they didn't ask, well, when did that water come? And as all of us know, the large majority, a little over 10 inches of that rain, came between just before Thanksgiving and the end of last year. And we've only had one day so far this year, and I believe that was the afternoon and overnight of June 16th and 17th, where we got basically an inch of rain. So there's a chance As Mr. D'Anzo mentioned, that we might, there's about a 40% chance of showers this past maybe Friday night, Saturday morning, which obviously isn't nearly sufficient for the fact that January and February are supposed to be the two wettest months of the year. We were blessed to have the 10 inches late last year. We still have the green on the hillsides, and if you're walking through the woods, there's green there, but there's still cause for obvious concern. But I just want to also, even though we're still in February, you know, make every effort out there, all of you folks that live here in Cambria, to do what you can, limit your water use, and we'll be hopefully in the next month or two addressing more efficient ways of water use and reuse in our community. I just want to put, by the way, water in perspective. There's roughly 7.5 billion people on this planet. And right now, clean water scarcity throughout the calendar year affects over 2 billion people on this planet. Over a billion people on this planet during the course of a year have no access to clean water. Tens of millions of people on this planet spend up to and over six hours a day just collecting and transporting water. So I know that we have concerns here about our rate increase and all of those things similar to that, but we should be grateful that we can turn on our tap and get clean water. We can flush our toilets and take a shower every day because other people, like I said, you know, many millions of people on this planet aren't nearly as fortunate as we are with regard to water. Plus, they don't live here either. So just wanted to make that comment. Also, with regard to our water facility, the emergency water facility, also called the SWF or the AWTP, which last operated in December of 2016. And as yet, as Mr. D'Enzo pointed out, and as Ms. Bettenhausen pointed out, it has yet to be permitted by the county, much less the Coastal Commission. So this past month, the expense for the facility was $373,000, of which just under $330,000 was for the payment that we make twice a year to Western Alliance Bank regarding buying this facility back from the bank. And, of course, these payments will continue until summer of 2034. People need to be aware of that. Also, in the past calendar year of 2019, the total cost of this facility to the district, meaning the ratepayers of Cambria, was over $1,145,000. This is basically the same amount of money that the ratepayers and the district spent in 2018, and in years 2016 and 17, it was $1.4 and $1.3 million. So in the past 4 years, and of course we spent money in 2014 and 2015, but in the past 4 years, roughly $5 million have been spent on our facility, which hasn't run since December of 2016, and so far, a few years back, provided roughly 10% of the acre feet needed in 1 year. I think it was about 63 acre feet. I'm just bringing this up because whether you're in favor of this, it's probably one of the most contentious issues in our community. So whether you're in favor of this facility or it's something that you've been angry about since it was built, I think it's important for folks to know how much money is being spent. And, of course, this, by the way, doesn't include staff time. And I want to mention that last year, I believe it was in the month of March, staff worked 7 days a week for a number of weeks to empty the impoundment basin as was ordered by the state and the Regional Water Quality Control Board. So I thought I would pass that on to everyone out there that is watching and or be watching in the future. So that's my president's report, I believe. And let's move on to the Finance Committee's report and Vice President Steidel.
In terms of comment for your president's report, if you have alternatives rather than just reciting numbers, I'd love to hear them. So moving on to the Finance Committee report, the Finance Committee took a look at the second quarter budget in its review, and we'll be seeing that later in the agenda portion today. And we also got some information and feedback relative to the audit review that was going on and the expectation that we'll be seeing that in the, I'll say near term, in that it should be able to make one of our March meetings, hopefully the first March meeting. And we unfortunately have had a member of the committee who has been out because of medical, and she was also the recording secretary, so we had an interim recording secretary appointed, but to pass on our wishes for the quick recovery and look forward to her return to the committee. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have the Policy Committee report and Director Howell.
Thank you. There is not a great deal to report at this time. The board has seen most of what our committee has put forth. In fact, there's some which is later on in the agenda here. Our meeting is next week, and we will be seating our new member, so we are back to our full complement. However, it's likely still to be, we'll be barely a quorum next week, as two of our members are not. One is definitely not going to be there, and I think the other one may also. Doesn't mean that we can't do some work. One of the things which we will be doing is forming a subcommittee to start working on the email retention policy, which was brought to us last time. We will also be spending a little time, just even though it's really up to the board to set our purpose and objectives, I think it's still useful for the committee to talk amongst themselves about that as we await for further guidance from the board in this matter. One thing I'm going to propose, or I'd like to propose to the board, is considering a name change for the committee. I think it might be better to call it something like a policy research committee or research and evaluation, because it doesn't really establish policies. It's not its job. Its job is to make recommendations regarding policies. And so, in a sense, I'm just trying to get the boat turned a little, to use a... And I think possibly we might want to consider a name change. I just put that in your... for you guys to kind of sleep on or something and think about. It might better describe what we do and might help to give us some guidance in that area. But anyway, that's my report. I'll have more to say next month, I think.
Thank you, Director Howell. Moving on to the Resources and Infrastructure Committee report and Director Pearson.
Thank you. And thank you, Director Howell, for putting something else in my brain to think about.
Sorry.
Our report will be delivered by our Vice Chair, Ms. Dean.
And this is probably going to be longer than the last two reports we just heard. Sorry. The R&I committee met February 10th. All committee members were present, as well as utility manager Ray DiZanzo and the general manager John Weigold. About a dozen members of the community were also present, and we thank them for their interest and participation in our discussions. A lot more people there than are here today. We discussed a proposal by committee members Brad Fowles and Paul Nugent regarding the creation of short informational videos. Brad and Paul have volunteered their time and expertise to do this as a community service. The pilot video proposed was regarding reading water meters and how to determine if there's a water leak. Committee member Brad Fowles presented an excellent script for this pilot video, and committee member Paul Nugent presented a production plan. An ad hoc committee for this project, consisting of Brad and Paul, was formed later on in the meeting, with all committee members voting to proceed with a pilot video. The video will be brought back at our March meeting for review and discussion. The production plan will be discussed further after a portion of it is reviewed by our legal counsel. We discussed scheduling more tours of the wastewater treatment plant and our advanced water treatment plant. Utilities manager DiEnzo asked to postpone this until after he has toured the Orange County groundwater replenishment plant and sees how their tours are conducted. Three members of the R&I committee have also expressed interest in touring the Orange County facility, and their participation in this tour will be at no cost to the district. We have reviewed the district asset list. After seeing that there were probably some items on the list that the district no longer has, some current things that are not yet on the list, as well as assets that are very old and may need budgeting for future replacement, the list is being referred back to the general manager and the staff for updating. We discussed the CIP list and how to color code it for better clarity as to what projects have been completed or are in the works. We agreed to use three colors to indicate projects that are budgeted for the current year, projects that are in progress, and projects that are completed. We proposed making large poster boards of these updated lists and having them available quarterly at the CCSD meetings. Chairman Pearson will work with Utilities Manager D'Enzo and Finance Manager Pam Duffield to bring these lists current. It was brought to the committee's attention that there were a lot of ad hoc committees on record for R&I. The Ad Hoc Committee on Bylaws, as well as the Ad Hoc Committee on Mission Statement, Objective, and Goals, completed their assignments and have been disbanded. The Water Demand Management Ad Hoc Committee completed a draft water demand report that is posted on the CCSD website. We did not have adequate information at the time to complete our report with accurate offset data. It has been requested that the Ad Hoc Committee reconvene, update the report with the most recent data available, and resubmit it to the R&I Committee as a final report. The information in this final report may be useful to both the Ad Hoc Committee on the Urban Water Management Plan update and the Water Conservation Ad Hoc Committee. The Ad Hoc Committee to review the current Urban Water Management Plan is being retasked with assisting with the selection of a consultant to work on the CDP and the revision of the Urban Water Management Plan, and then working as ongoing assistance may be needed. The Water Conservation and Gray Water Use Committee had not begun its work yet. It has been reestablished with James Webb and Brad Fowles, who will be investigating potential conservation and retrofit measures as well as gray water use. The formation of the Ad Hoc Committee on Upgrading the Water Distribution System and on the Research of Grant Opportunities are also disbanded at this time. Utilities Manager Ray D'Enzo and his staff are working on these subjects and will refer to R&I if R&I Committee assistance is needed. Our next R&I meeting is scheduled for March 9th at 2 o'clock. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions? Comments for the R&I Committee? Nope. Thank you.
Thank you, and Director Pearson, I think you're still on the hot seat now for the NCAC report.
Okay, the NCAC met last night, and basically there were, it was a pretty quick meeting. First, they got a good report from Lieutenant Coomer of the CHP on the evacuation routes that he was asked to look at, making two lanes going out of town if need be for an evacuation situation. He talked about how they would do that and what intersections they would be manning and how many people they would need at each intersection and how many people that he had available. And then he said, and we would complement that with people from CERT and from the sheriff's office as available. But basically, it was a preliminary report. He'll do a more detailed report at the Cambria Fire Safe Focus Group's Preparedness Day, which is now scheduled for May 16th here at the Vets Hall from 10 o'clock until 1 o'clock. At that time, we will probably also have some information on evacuation route studies from Dr. Neroso that will also be they're asking him, you know, he did that study on Lodge Hill and said 4 hours to get everybody out of Lodge Hill, worst case. And so we're now asking him to relook at it with the two lanes available, and hopefully that will make the time considerably less. I don't know whether it'll make it in half, but it'll at least make it considerably less. The other items... Supervisor Gibson was there and said that the ADU ordinance was passed by the supervisors. He said it should have no immediate impact on Cambria because it's still got to be looked at by Coastal Commission and the current LCU talks about zero growth here anyway. So all of that will be forthcoming at some future time. Another item that was brought up was dogs on leashes, and I'd like to throw a little bit more on this because it was brought up that there are a lot of dogs going free on leashes, not just on the beach where that's allowed, but then back into the parking lot and that's not supposed to happen. You're supposed to leash your dog as it gets there. There are also a lot of dogs on the ranch that are not being leashed, and the ranch is a 100% leashed dog area. I know that a lot of people don't do that, but and a lot of people don't have good control over their dogs, so they should. So those things were brought up at the NCAC meeting, and that kind of concludes my meeting, my report on that.
Thank you, Director Pearson. Director Rice, do we have a report from San Simeon CSD?
I don't have a report from San Simeon CSD. I have some questions on the other reports when we get to that point. And if you want to further talk about the CDP, we did have a meeting of board members with staff about the CDP.
Yeah, why don't you go ahead and...
So on February 6th, we got together with the utilities manager, Mr. D'Enzo, as well as a couple of folks from the county, and Director Pearson and I, and General Manager Weigold. We kind of went over where we are and what needs to get accomplished. We also briefly discussed the project description and things that needed to either be added or taken out before we bring that forward for the Board of Directors to review. And or send to committee or however that happens. We don't have any action to get on an agenda with the Planning Commission yet because, as Mr. D'Enzo stated, we are trying to iron out the potential impacts and conditions that might be required by either the county or the Coastal Commission regarding this project, and that means gathering up and making sure we can't do any of that until we have a clear project description, which has been the main focus at this point. That's what I have for my notes on that meeting. Did you have anything else that you wanted to add?
No. They also stated that there would be a few changes to the actual application itself once the project description was changed because it just needs to be done. But that... the county and our staff is working very, very closely now to get that done with some speed so we can get that back in front of this board March or April at the very latest.
All right, I guess it's back to me now. I can't think of any other reports that other members of the board are giving. Director Pearson, excuse me. Oh, Fire Safe Focus Group. Pardon.
Yeah, just a quick one on the Fire Safe Focus Group. I did include my report as part of the agenda packet so that I wouldn't have to cover everything. But the one thing that I do have to add to that is the alert system that we're working on. We do think we're going to have an estimate together here pretty soon as to what it would cost. And maybe in March we'll be bringing to the board of directors here what our grant opportunities would be so that you can be aware of that and give us basic approval to go ahead and apply for a grant if a opportunity does come up. So that would be something on probably the March agenda, the second one, if possible. But otherwise, the rest of the report is part of the agenda package. Thanks.
Thank you. Usually I have two reports to give, but since last month, the Friends of the Fiscalini Ranch Preserve had both their annual meeting as well as their monthly meeting. There's no meeting in February. I do have a report from the Forest Committee. A few items here. It was a discussion of Governor Newsom's executive order placing Cambria in a, quote, high fire hazard zone, unquote. There appeared to be some confusion in this area if, in fact, this does apply to Cambria and regarding the removal of dead and dying trees. So the Forest Committee is going to be looking into this a little bit further. Also, there was a little bit of concern at the state meeting of Cal Fire that a term was used, quote, cutting the green tape, unquote, meaning perhaps removing some of the environmental regulations that limit how to address dealing with trees and vegetation that are described as in fire-prone areas. On a lighter note, it was found that $90,000 is available from the County Beautification Grant, and that's through March 19th of this year. Unfortunately, it's a little bit late to apply for that, but this is regarding trails and benches, decorative landscape, and so forth. So there's it was suggested that perhaps this be looked into for next year, and one of the suggestions was if we did we're going to apply for a grant, it would be to approve the appearance of the back of the businesses in the West Village that face Highway 1. And, well, I'm not going to comment any further on that. There was also a thought of maybe naming a weed of the month, which we do have in abundance here in Cambria, and we would start with pampas grass. As we all know, pampas grass, you can see it all over town, and it just gets bigger and bigger. And it's invasive, it's highly flammable, it's harmful to animals, and despite the fact that people actually plant it, it's not really decorative. And so that's our first weed of the month. Also, Green Space volunteers planted over 3,000 trees up on State Park property just north of Santa Rosa Creek Road. 26 families and individuals were involved, and a good time was had by all. Recently, there was also a cleanup on Moonstone Beach Drive that found hundreds of cigarette butts, even though some of the motels there have receptacles for people to discard their cigarette butts. But as we know, that's probably when they have the beach cleanup in September, you know, the California coastal cleanup, the number one item is cigarette butts. Also, folks have been observed smoking while they're coming in and out of the Fiscalini Ranch at both the Tipton and Trenton exits and entrances. So perhaps there's a need for larger no smoking signs in those areas. Hard to believe people would be smoking in the forest when we're not getting any rain in February. But and then finally, something called the Pismo Preserve has just opened up down in Pismo Beach. It's been open now for, a couple of weeks. It's beautiful. It was described as even more attractive than the Fiscalini Ranch. It's available to the public, just like here, at no charge. So that's something we might think about just heading down to South County and enjoying. And that's my report from the Forest Committee. Moving on now to an item that's on page 22 of our agenda. And it's the Affordable Housing Ad Hoc Committee report, which I believe is Vice President Stidell and Director Howell. So who would like to discuss this or lead off the discussion, I should say?
The Ad Hoc Committee wanted to bring back a status of what had been going on and provide some draft information about some of the processes that we had been looking at. Just to clarify right up front, this is draft information, although there's one segment of this that I think that we're very close to being able to move forward on, and that it is the waitlist application process. But just to give you a summary background of what's been going on, the ad hoc itself was defined back in August of last year, and there were two tasks associated with what we were charged. One was to evaluate and provide a recommendation on the affordable housing applications for allocation. The other was to create a process for the affordable housing allocation recommendations and approval to the full board to be able to adopt. What we did initially was set out to understand exactly what the county requirements were relative to affordable housing, because they are so different than things related to single residence or commercial. And what we found in taking a look at what those requirements are, which are very specific and separate from the, as I mentioned, residential and commercial. For instance, the county requires that a developer record an affordable housing agreement that describes the number of units, the income, rent and sales, and price restrictions, and then the affordability duration of 30, 45, or 55 years. And what that means is that when an affordable housing project is defined, there is a legal limitation put on maintaining that affordable housing constraint for a period of time. And if the structure itself is sold at some point or bequeathed, then the new ownership takes on a reinstatement of that, and that same timeline begins all over again. The developer is also required to provide documentation from a third-party housing co-op or housing authority, because they're the ones that perform the eligibility terminations for affordable housing. The county itself does not certify housing as affordable. It's handled as a third-party execution. And then the county project review cannot be initiated until the requester of the project has received an intent to serve letter from the CCSD. So with those constraints put in mind, we, of course, then looked at what our district code said. And the district code is not in alignment with what these county requirements are, which took us into a discussion of, okay, so do we try to revise our district code to insert those areas where things are different? Or are we dealing with enough difference that all that does is make it extraordinarily complex for anyone to understand, and that we would be better off relieving any reference to affordable housing in the Section 8 of the district code and establishing a new element within that Section 8 to be able to describe what the affordable housing process is and the requirements. And that is what we had determined after much conversation and looking at the other ways in which we could handle the process. That being said, we moved on to addressing some considerations that the, or considering some concerns that the community had voiced as far as the affordable housing and its wait list and its intent to serve process. And one was that there is a there's a transparent process to identify the points of responsibility and how that final decision process is brought to the board. The ability to consider overall affordable housing in terms of quantity and types. The thing to keep in mind about affordable housing is it doesn't function in the same way that single family residential does. Single family residential, you're dealing with a single structure, you're dealing with basically, you know, a build may be different from one to the other in terms of the number of bedrooms and bathrooms, but it is still just a singular entity. Where when you're looking at affordable housing, you're looking at differing levels of affordability from workforce, moderate, lower income, very low income. And also whatever the community assessment need might be. Is there a high need to be able to determine that moderate housing is established versus very low income or vice versa? And so being able to look at that and understand what the community need was is probably part of the analysis that we have to go through in this process. What we recognize is that the CCSD staff would be responsible for administrative elements of the process, the paperwork processing, but the board is responsible for defining the type of affordable housing the community should be considered, would want to consider, in the quantity and range. And any of the intent to serve letters would be based on a board decision and direction and then signed by the general manager by direction. So in looking at all of this, we brainstormed and mapped the undefined elements as far as that whole affordable housing application process would take place. And we recognized after a point in time that the waitlist application, which was one of the major elements that we were sent after, is actually just a singular process in this. that there are other processes that are follow-on actions to that that actually work themselves through the intent to serve. So we actually took the time to try to map ourselves all the way through all of the potential processes, not so much because we wanted to resolve all of them and identify all of them, but to make sure that the wait list application, which sat at the front of it, was something that met all of the needs of the end process so that we weren't building in problems for ourselves as we went along. So we identified that there are a couple of additional processes beyond the wait list, and there is a secondary sheet here that is a flow chart that kind of breaks what those processes are that we can take a look at in a minute. But to let you know also that Melissa Bland participated with us in going through and working these as she had an intimate knowledge of what the needs are for our district as well as what some of the county requirements of, that we needed to observe. When we got through the information and documentation to this point, we had the utility manager take a look at that also to see and get feedback from him, because after all, it was going to be his staff that was going to have to support what these processes represented and needed to see if he felt that there were any fatal flaws to it or any other considerations we needed to make. In addition to that, it was reviewed by District Council. Mr. Carmels had an opportunity to take a look at it. So we still want to reach out and coordinate with the county staff to ensure that we kind of have all of the boxes checked off in this and that we're considering all of the elements of it that we need to. So currently, we're satisfied that we've mapped out a process for the Affordable Housing Program wait list administratively, but the application needs to be developed for that process, and we're expecting that Director Howell and myself and with Melissa in the lead to that would be developing that form format. And that it would be inclusive of an instruction sheet for the applicants so that they would know very specifically that there are other requirements of the county that have to be met so that there isn't any surprise for anyone about the necessities of what a request would represent. The items that exist currently is that there is a list of interested parties with projects that are currently seeking affordable housing, and it's a date order list that's maintained by Melissa Bland, and they would be the formation of the initial affordable housing program wait list. And when they're filing by having to fill out what this new application would represent, the allocation requesters would maintain the same position as that established allocation list date initially, so that there isn't any confusion and people feel that, you know, they were somehow displaced within the list. But there are two things that we're going to have to be conscious of, not only as a board but as a community, when we're using the term wait list as we go forward, because it's no longer going to be a single process. There's going to be an affordable housing program wait list and there's a residential wait list, and they have different requirements because of the constraints and structure of the county requirements. In addition, that would be the case for intent to serve, because in going through an affordable housing intent to serve process, there are separate elements to it than what the residential intent to serve process represents. So in going forward, what we wanted to focus on that we will be bringing back to the board as a formal resolution for you to take a look at, is that we want to get the feedback and approval to establish the affordable housing process as a standalone element within the Section 8, not something that would remain embedded to Section 8. And that would include retracting the references to affordable housing in the myriad of other places that it exists in Section 8, and then just have a standalone clean statement relative to affordable housing. We intend to go forward with your consent to develop that waitlist application and be able to bring that back for board approval, and whether you would like the ad hoc committee to continue to develop the ITS process review and vetting, if you would like, for the affordable housing program. So those were the kinds of things we're bringing back to the board today. As I said, there is a flowchart that's part of what we were bringing to you, and there were some remaining process items to address or resolve that are mentioned at the bottom of that. All except one relate to things that would still need to be addressed related to the second and third processes on that flow chart, the affordable housing needs assessment and the offering and intent to serve process. The waitlist application is pretty much defined by what's there, with the exception of that first item underneath the remaining process items to address. So thank you for your time and your patience in listening to this, but it has ended up being a little bit more of an involved process that we thought maybe initially, and I look forward to hearing any feedback from you now that you might have relative to the information that we've brought to you and or from the community too.
Well, I see. Thank you very much, Vice President Steidel, for that very thorough report. Before I go to two members of the board who have their lights on, Director Hall, as being a member of that ad hoc committee, do you have anything to add to this?
No, the Director Seidel's report was very thorough and covered all the salient points, and I have to give her credit for the very good write-up of our work as well. So, yeah, I think you have everything in front of you that you need. Well, maybe not. It's your turn to ask questions. But no, the report basically covered everything that we did, which, by the way, was kind of fun.
It was, and there was a lot of brainstorming that went on, and it was enjoyable to work through that with one another, with Dr. Howell and myself, as well as with Melissa. It was, it was enjoyable.
I saw Director Rice making many notes, but Director Pearson had his light on first, so let me go to him. Sorry, Amanda. And, Director Pearson.
So it sounds to me like what you need to do, and you're asking for permission to do, is get these three processes straight first and bring those to us, and then you'd be ready to write a new area of Section 8 in order to define all of that, those three processes that you've come up with?
I would think that would be what the board would want to do. The one piece to it that is possible is to, in parallel, go ahead and develop the application form and those pieces, so that once that Section 8 is rewritten, then we would have basically something to launch with relatively soon.
Yeah, so okay. As part of the first process, you would make that application form and everything, I fully think that yes, you need to make those three processes, you know, kind of outline them a little bit more in detail than you have here, although this is very good, and then bring that back to us and for approval, and then go ahead and be ready to write the new either Chapter 8B or whatever it is, okay, and make that separate. That sounds like the plan to me, and that's great. Thank you.
Thank you, Director Pearson. Director Rice.
I do want to keep this as brief as possible, and I first want to start out saying thank you so much for a great written report. It makes it a lot easier to digest than just getting the information the day of the meeting, and I very much appreciate the work that both of you have done on this. I want to take a step back to what kind of community we are and what we do as a board. And what we do is we set the tone and policy for how this community exists and how we approach sharing resources with housing that's considered affordable is important. Is it a priority for Cambria? Does it mean that it's up and above other residential projects? I think it does, from what I've been listening to from this board to this point. I think it's important that that we acknowledge there's no organized constituency who are proponents for affordable housing other than developers. The people who will be living in these places are not an organized constituency. So getting their viewpoints, and I thank Mel McCulloch for bringing some folks out the last time we had a discussion on this so that we could hear directly from those who might be living in affordable houses in this community. All of that said, why do we have a wait list? I thought that affordable housing is something that was exempted out of the Code 350 moratorium on new connections. Can you answer that?
May I answer that? The question then is why a wait list? There is a terminology problem. If we could think of a better set of words, what the affordable housing wait list is a list of applications that are waiting to be processed, not necessarily to actually receive allocations. That's the difference between the residential housing wait list, which is the district decides that we can have 10 housing allocations. We tell the general manager, the mm-hmm. general manager pulls the wait list and then selects, mm-hmm. In wait list order, mm-hmm. the ones that can go forward. The affordable housing is a little different situation because, first of all, it's not subject to the same growth management ordinance. Mm-hmm. So the issue really has to do, I'll have to go find exactly where Director Steidel gave me the writing originally, which does clearly indicate that any additional water capacity that we have, and unfortunately doesn't define that, mm-hmm. must be used for affordable housing. So it's an entirely different, so that wait list is simply saying these are people who have projects that they would like to go forward, but they can only go forward according to as the board sees the need for the particular types of housing. In other words, there's an element of discretion which is absent from the residential wait list. And it might be better to call the affordable housing, it's not like they're not waiting to build, they're waiting to be for the board to consider their applications
right.
in light
so maybe
of current
that, maybe
needs.
It's just that we need an application process for affordable housing rather than they don't have to go on to a wait. That seems like an extra step. If what we're doing is essentially putting together the list of people who would apply, and then we invite them to apply after we look at it, it seems like that's an extra complicating step instead of just having an application that would be different from residential in that the board would want to consider whether it's affordable before we give an intent to serve for affordable housing, even though the county doesn't certify it. And it looks like it's maybe later in their process that they have to deal with that, with proving the affordability.
Yeah, if you wanted to use the term of the application process, application for affordable housing program, that could certainly be, that's descriptive also. It's its weight in that, that the term was used and that, that historically it was referred to in that way. And because it would be a grouping that is waiting to have the district define the kinds of housing and how many and what people within that group would fit that. It's mm-hmm. it's interesting because the quote-unquote wait list for affordable housing doesn't have that same kind of progressive expectation that the residential wait list does. It isn't numeric. I mean, the data that it's applications accepted is a date stamp, but that doesn't ensure that that's going to be the first affordable housing program that's going to be built. It's going to be those that would fit the criteria that the board determines are the type of housing and the quantity. So if someone had a project of 50, but we only were looking to, you know, have something in the 30 range, then it's possible that something else, some other project would be considered, or that those projects that you know, fit the requirement of the affordable housing agreement and the third party co-op, but are being handled by something like the People's Self-Help, who have a track record of
right.
handling that type of program and, you know, have things lined up for themselves already so that it's almost a shovel-ready situation. I, you know, there's so many things to consider in that process.
Right. It seems to me that having a process that parallels but has the additional information the board would need, like how many number of units are going to be affordable in the project, if there are more, if it's more than it, because single family can be affordable. Habitat for Humanity builds them in lots of locations, not here, but in other locations. So it's not always just multifamily. But it seems to me the application process should be the same with additional required information so the board can make a good decision, but that a wait list in this community, I mean, we should really, when somebody comes, ask in most communities, when somebody comes and says, I need a letter of an intent to serve because I'm going to build a house, you give them a letter of intent to serve because you know you've got the water for it. And that should be the process in general. We've ended up with a wait list not because of the moratorium, but because of a limitation on how many connections we could add as part of a condition of the sewer plant upgrades that happened long, long, long time ago. So once we got to 125, number 126 became number one on the list until the following year, and that's how we ended up with a wait list. Seems to me that a wait list for affordable speaks to we're putting them in the same kind of vicinity.
Yeah, no, I understand what you're saying, that, and then the inference that would carry and how
right.
that would be, it could be a complication for people to understand. I mean, personally, I don't have any problem with it being, you know, referred to in some other manner, just application for affordable, you know.
Right, an application for a letter of intent for an affordable project in some way.
Let's see. May I jump in here, although I think Director Pearson's ahead of me.
No, go ahead.
Oh. Well, I think the reason we this concept of a wait list came about because right now, for example, we have a number of applications mm-hmm. that are sitting there. A significant number of them are for moderate level.
Mm-hmm.
And then some, a few are for very low income. It's kind of that mix. The point being that as things go forward, we're going to be receiving applications for different levels of affordability. But part of what the board has is, and again, there is verbiage in a number of places that suggests that we do have this discretion to determine what fits the needs of the community. And if the board were to determine that right now, to this year, we need five lower, very low income
units. Mm-hmm. And so what we would like to be able to is assure the applicants that they will be processed in the order that, in other words, we'll let's say we have 10 applications, and let's say there happen to be 10 applications for low, to build very low income units. Well, we would like to assure the developers that we'll start with the first one that we got and proceed in order. And so it's a wait list in that sense. So number 10, we won't consider number 10 unless number 4 or number mm-hmm. 5 or number 9 is elected not to build. But we will be skipping over somebody who is only wanting to build for moderate income because we've determined that the community doesn't need more moderate income housing at that point. So we wanted to some way provide the developers who are going through this process and jumping through these hoops to give them at least some sense as to where they might fall within this universe of applications. And there may be a better terminology and maybe a better way to handle that, but that was the thinking behind that. Mm-hmm. And wait list was the best we could come up with.
Right.
So maybe part of what we do is we have it structured for what level of affordability based on, you know, federal laws and on state laws, all those things, how that calculated the affordability. Maybe what we do is we separate them by what level of affordability they are, and then the board can set priorities and say, based on the housing needs for the community, which I'd like to talk about just a little bit in a minute, based on the housing needs for the community, we're going to go first with the low income and then moderate and then the very low, or however the board determines. Do you have a thought on that?
I'm inclined not to segregate in that way, just because if we have someone that has a mixed project and has some that, say, are very low income and had some that were moderate, I can see still approaching that builder and saying, this is what the board, the community has determined should be built this year. Would you be willing to have your project be all lower income? And, you know, if they can't pencil it out and don't want to go forward in that way, they say no and you just move on. So I don't know. I mean, I don't know where you would put someone on the list if they had a mixed.
Yeah, I understand that. Let me move on to the affordable housing needs, because I know the county does a housing element that they update. I think they're in the process of updating theirs right now, and that does take into account what's the current housing situation, counts the numbers of affordable, sites that are potential for affordable, and all of that comes out as the county's report. I think it might be well advised that we at least begin with that, and if we feel we need additional information, we can, you know, then undertake our own study. But I think it's better if we don't reinvent the wheel and we go with what the county has to say on it. And then the last thing that I just wanted to raise is that when we are looking at policy and ordinances, while developing policy, it's a good idea to keep certain specific examples in mind so you don't create yourself a box that you can't get out of. But I think it's also imperative that we don't put the cart before the horse, so to speak, because a policy can always have exceptions made. If it gets to the decision point, the general manager says no, the person can appeal to the board, and then it's an exception to what our current policy is, as opposed to developing a policy that could encompass all potential or the people who are already on that wait list you mentioned. Instead of accommodating that, we should be discussing what this board and the community would like to see in terms of how do we enact our values as a community in a policy on affordable housing. Does that mean that we start with the lowest income, or does that mean it's more important we get folks? I was surprised how much waiters and waitresses can make in a year. Way more than me. Too bad I'm not a good waitress, because I just don't have the aptitude for it. But it might be that the moderate income is more needed in this community than the extremely low, because we don't really have folks that can even be here except for out on the ranch or at the Bridge Street place when they're extremely low income.
Right. And that's why the item 5 under the remaining items to resolve or address, determine, document how district will define or conduct community needs assessment.
Okay. So, yeah, and one of my suggestions is we rely for the data. I think we could be relying on the county data, because I think it can be helpful at the very least. We're getting more and more land use type things happening here, where we have to deal with properties that we own that are open space and have conservation easements, properties that we don't own but have conservation easements. We've got how do we do the intent to serve process with affordable or with not affordable? With affordable or regular market rate residential housing and commercial properties. Those are all things that, to me, are encompassed in something that could be helpful for us to have somebody, not just ad hoc committees, but on a longer-term basis, kind of get that basis of information. Like, what is it when we're talking about retiring lots because you're going to move a meter or all that stuff? It might be something we would want to look at for creating a committee, but I don't want to create more work before we're ready to go. But we all know that eventually we're going to have to give out intent to serve letters for affordable and for market rate residential, which means that we have to have all these processes laid out. So having something that's parallel, we could duplicate into the residential market rate from the affordable seems like not a bad idea.
Unfortunately, because of the county requirements, the elements that make or break that process for affordable housing cannot be just set aside, and then the rest of it can be residential. I think, or are you saying that?
I'm saying that we should be having a process that it will make sense when we look at doing market rate residential. It's parallel. There's more information required, but in terms of the back end, once something's built, we don't have any attachment to either one, because we don't ensure the affordability over the long haul. All we do is provide the water and sewer and fire protection services. And so, I mean, I don't know how much. I know there's more involved at the county level, but I don't know how much more is required from our district other than a letter of intent to serve. And if the board wants to see the projects before they issue those, I think if you look at the water master plan, there, and as we get more information about both our conservation, our retrofit plan, and what our actual water use has been, I think we may find that we have enough to accommodate all of the affordable housing EDUs that we currently have set aside, because we used to have it in the ordinance that every year we reviewed it, and we took that out of the ordinance because we already had 50-something and we weren't having anybody apply.
Well, this ad hoc was tasked with looking at affordable housing.
I understand. I understand. I'm just saying it's helpful to sometimes keep in mind.
I think this process for affordable housing is a lot more complicated than the residential one is. I think we need to get this one straight, and then we can then look at the more
simplistic.
So why is it more complicated, I guess, is kind of where
Because we have to do an assessment every year as to what kind of housing do we need. So do we do that, or do we rely on the county to do that? These are the things that this ad hoc committee was set up to look at, and I think they've done a good job of trying to do that.
Right.
So let's let them go ahead and bring back to us the processes that they think will make sense. But I really do think that this has additional steps in it that we have to make sure are met prior to issuing an intent to serve. Whereas on the residential, you're on the wait list, you're ready to go, boom, you're going to go.
Well, they still have to get their intent to serve letter because their number has come up, and then they have to get a will serve letter, which is part of the process for affordable too, right?
No.
No. Will serve letter is for for remodels, and you're thinking of a connection permit.
Okay.
Yeah, and as I recall, and I may be wrong on this too, but I seem to remember something in the code about not issuing a connection permit unless we'd see the unless we see that the CC&Rs are appropriate for the that the property is. I may be mistaken on that, but I have in the back of my mind. I think
I would
read
guess.
That.
That sounds right.
But yeah. That's the connection permit. Will serves are for. We had that. Remember last. And it's a source of tremendous confusion. Again, our terminology.
Maybe defining some of these terms.
Our terminology
I think
is
could be
so.
Helpful,
we need to be more creative. I think.
Yeah, will serve doesn't have to do with an action that the CCSD is providing to a builder. The will serve is a definition to the county that really is we are already serving and we will continue to serve for the retrofit that's being put forward. So will serve is a very confusing term. I agree.
We haven't done permitting in so many years, couple of decades. I think it's possible we have one person on staff that was here when we were still doing that, and she's sitting at the end of our set of desks here. So, and no offense to Ms. Madrid, but I don't think I would remember something, a process that I had learned 18 years ago and haven't really used much since.
Well, it talks to the process changing, too, because
correct.
The county code, Title 23, has changed so much, so...
Okay, and I know I've really beaten a dead horse. I just want to make sure that we also have a standard of review because if you look at the waitlist application process under the last second to last, it says district staff accepts applications and processes in order received. Do we make sure it's complete? What has to be in that? Is that part of what you'll be working on?
This was a flow chart of concepts that we were trying to work through.
I don't mean to frustrate. I'm just trying to determine. Who determines that it's good enough, and if that's the GM or the district engineer? I mean, I don't know how much, and that may be stuff that's administrative and is left to staff.
I'll put it this way: okay. we had mocked up what an application form would look like,
okay.
And that application form addressed many of the things
great.
That you're talking about. So I guess we're carrying intrinsically some information that isn't obvious here.
Wonderful. I very much thank you for this, and I think that having this board take the lead and really go forward on affordability and support affordable housing in this community, more of it. I'm 100% behind it.
Just so folks aren't confused at all, the flowchart that was put in had some bracketing information that was missing from it, and the intent of these arrows between the three was you go all the way to the bottom of the first process, then up to the top of the second process, all the way through down to the bottom of the second process, and then up to the top of the third process. And with some of those lines missing, I don't know that that was well understood. So I've finished with mine, my presentation, and unless there's some other comments.
Can I ask a quickie question on that then? And the substance of the discussion is then we should go forward, concretize the process, do the form, concretize the process, bring it back to you, and then talk about modifying the code.
Yes.
In that, okay.
Yeah. That's what,
sure
that's what I
all
recorded, yeah. Was there anyone from the community that had any...
Yes, we actually do have. Gordon, if you're still awake out there, if you wouldn't mind stepping up and giving a comment on this item, please.
Well, it's been a very good discussion here of something that could be but won't be unless you get on board the Coastal Commission, because we've attended many meetings in SLO that has letters of intent applied for by different organizations. and they've all been declined by the Coastal Commission. So I would think that the thought that I'm not quite sure all the history of what Amanda has behind us about the limiting the water wait list is a priority as opposed to a sewage treatment plant list that I'm not aware of for saying that we have all the water we need and can start issuing letters of intent to low authority is what
that is
Amanda sort of said there. And I'm saying that we need to get rid of the restrictions by the Coastal Commission before you keep sending stuff to slow it down. But I agree 100% that the CCSD should be in control of all letters of intent or will do instead of the staff having that responsibility that I think is getting us in more trouble than we have with the community confusion. Does that make sense?
Okay. Can Mr. President, may I clarify just really quick?
Sure.
I didn't say that eliminating the wait list is a priority. I said the affordable housing wait list is not necessarily something we need to be doing. I think the entire wait list is a whole nother ball of wax that I was not commenting on.
Thank you, Director Rice. Next request to speak on this item is Leslie Richards.
Hi, Leslie Richards, Cambria resident. I just want to clarify, too, that workforce housing, moderate housing, is not low-income housing. There is a huge difference here. Also, in 2014, we needed an emergency where we had sand coming through our taps. So until you have a new water source, I appreciate all the work and energy on affordable housing, but no project is going to go through with the Coast Commission, including affordable housing, until we have the CDP online. And Mr. Farmer, President Farmer, excuse me for a correction. Just because the EWS, the RO units produced 63 acre feet of water, that does not mean it actually got into the circulation system. Remember, it was injected downstream of our well fields. So, yes, it produces water that goes right out to sea. So until we have a new water source, this is a very interesting discussion you're having, very lively, and needs to be done. But there will be no building in Cambria per the Coast Commission at this point. So let's work on the CDP for the EWS. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Richard, for addressing two items in one. All right. Not seeing any other lights on, I just want to follow up, since I'd have this written down here for about the last 20 minutes or so, on what Ms. Richard last said. This discussion has mainly been about affordable housing. Occasionally, we might mention workforce housing or low-income housing. It would be a good idea to have an idea, number two. Number one, what do those terms mean? What income or lack of income are we referring to? Because one would think workforce housing would be, well, they're not making much, whereas I believe that's about $120,000 a year, whereas low income is probably about $27,000 a year, and affordable is about $80,000 a year, and moderate is about the median income, which is about $45,000 a year. Also, probably, and I know this has already been mentioned here, and then I'm going to stop and we're going to take a break, assessing where the greatest needs or need is in our community with regard to housing. And we know the business community is stressed with regard to their employees, not necessarily wait staff that make a lot of money, but let's say other folks, folks that clean motels and that type of thing. They're strapped for finding housing of any availability in this community. So it's a much more complicated issue than we have. Seeing no one else wishing to speak on this item, hard to believe we haven't even gotten to the consent agenda, much less regular business. Let's return at 25 minutes till 5 o'clock. Thank you. Six, consent agenda. Any questions on the consent agenda? Seeing none, can I have a motion to approve? Oh, excuse me. Yes, Director Rice.
I don't need to pull it because I'm okay with approving it, but I would just like to say to the PROS Commission that I would like to have more concrete goals than they've given us. I mean, when they talk about work with the County of San Luis Obispo on the establishment of bike paths, where? How many bike paths? How do we know they accomplished the goal? That's what I was not seeing in this goals discussion. I do support all of the conceptual ideas, though, and so I just want to put forward that it would be nice if we could actually measure it and say, hey, we achieved one new bike path, or we achieved X. That's all. That's my comment. And I would move approval of the consent agenda.
I second.
All right. Could we have a quick vote there, Ms. Madrid?
Director Rice?
Aye.
Director Pearson?
Aye.
Director Howell?
Aye.
Vice President Stidell?
Aye.
President Farmer?
Aye. Moving on to regular business and item 7A. It's a long day. General Manager Weigold.
Yes, Mr. President. Agenda item 7A is discussion and consideration of introduction of Ordinance 01-2020, repealing superseded provisions in Article 4 of Title 3 of the Cambria Community Services District Municipal Code relating to refuse and recycling rates. The staff is recommending that the Board of Directors discuss and consider introducing Ordinance Number 01-2020, which will repeal provisions of Article 4, Title 3 of the Cambria Community Services District Municipal Code relating to refuse and recycling rates that have been superseded and no longer operative. Our District Council, Tim Carmel, will discuss further.
I don't think anything else is necessary, but this is a very simple cleanup ordinance. It's repealing Article 4 of Title 3 of our Municipal Code. Those are refuse and recycling rates from 2001. They've been superseded numerous times, most recently in October of 2019. So it's recommended that you introduce this ordinance by title only, waive further reading, and move on.
Right, so I believe the recommendation here is just to approve of this item.
I'm asking you to, I love to do this, move to introduce an ordinance repealing Article 4 of Title 3 of the Cambria Community Services District Municipal Code relating to refuse and recycling rates and waive further reading.
So moved.
Second.
Under discussion?
No further discussion. Thank you for the clarification. Yes, Director Rice.
Will the current rate schedule be somewhere for people to find?
It's where it always is. I'm sure it's on our website, but it's very unusual to put it in your municipal code because these things usually get changed every year.
Yeah, I understood. I just want to be sure that it is somewhere that we have that this is a franchise thing and we do provide this service. We have the authority for and the rates can be found. Da da da. If we're taking the entire section out, as long as we have a way for people to find that information.
Well, remember, these rates are from 2001.
I understand, but it also includes who does the refuse service, yes?
No.
No, it's just the rates.
It's just the rates.
All right. Well, I've already made the motion.
Thank you. I just wanted to comment before. I believe, Mr. Carmel, you said it's where it always is. I'm sure it's on the district website. I'm just trying to add a little levity there.
We can verify that with the clerk, is it?
I can verify, yes, that it is on our website. If you're on our homepage, mm-hmm. There's a little button that says rates and fees. And if you click into there, you see all the utility rates and all the refuse rates.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Duffield. So we have a motion or something similar to that and a second. Can we have a roll call, please?
Director Rice?
Aye.
Vice President Stidell?
Aye.
Director Howell?
Aye.
Director Pearson?
Aye.
President Farmer?
Aye. Moving on to item 7B and General Manager Weigold.
Yes, Mr. President. Agenda item 7B is discussion and consideration of the second quarter budget report and consideration of recommendations to approve Resolution 04-2020, amending fiscal year 2019/20 budget. And I'll, staff is recommending the Board of Directors discuss and review the second quarter budget report and approve the recommendations that follow. And I'll have our Finance Minister, Pam Duffield, complete the report.
You're now a minister, Ms. Duffield.
Fine. We need levity now that it's 4:45. We need a little bit of giggles, don't we? Okay, so I'll just make my report brief and turn it over to you for any questions that you may have. So I'll just go through the budget adjustments quickly so that you're familiar with why we're doing what we're doing. So the first item is the budget adjustment for the general fund for the, and it is related to the fire department's budget. Your board heard a presentation. Whoops, sorry, my own. What happened? Okay. Your board heard back in December a presentation by the fire chief related to the emergency grant that they were had applied for the radios that they did not get. And your board made some recommendations to us to bring this back during the next quarter's report and do a budget adjustment. So what we're proposing to do is remove the $75,000 grant from the budget and that associated expenditure, and revise that amount to be a grant from the County of San Luis Obispo's Office of Emergency Services for $30,000, an expenditure of $42,000, and we're going to retitle that as a phase one of the radio replacements, and then we'll put a phase two into next year's budget. And so that results in a $12,000 impact from reserves to the general fund. That is what your board's recommendation was back in December. So that just solidifies that recommendation to us. And then on the water fund and the wastewater fund, we took an item to the Resource and Infrastructure Committee back in January because there were two emergent issues that were required replacements. They were fixed asset replacements. One was in the water fund. It was a well pump that had to be replaced for $19,200. And in the wastewater fund, it is a pump replacement that had to happen for $11,500. Neither one of those items were budgeted, so we are reallocating budget from existing projects to cover those costs. We've taken that through the Resource and Infrastructure Committee. They recommended that to the Finance Committee. It went to Finance in February, and Finance recommended bringing it to the board along with the quarterly report. So moving forward to, you know, each fund, one by, or each department, one by one. In the general fund, the fire department, we've already talked about the impact that the radio, that they're losing the grant has. Other than that, the only big swing or variance that you might see in the workbook pages is in the administrative fund. And they are just running low compared to where they should be in salary. So we expect to have some salary savings at the end of the year and definitely in the administrative group. You know, fire is always kind of an interesting time of year because they could still get called out for mutual aid response. So it's kind of hard to predict, you know, where we're going to end up with fire at the end of the year. And facilities seems to be, you know, floating right on track. So I don't foresee anything happening in the general fund. Moving on to the wastewater fund, we're seeing the same thing. We have two positions that have yet to been filled that were budgeted. So we are seeing a variance in their salaries. You know, they're much lower than what was anticipated. But overall, they're looking really good, and we hope that their frugal nature of spending in the operations area is going to continue, and they will end up in the positive at the end of the year. On the water fund, it's kind of the same story. They're still low in salaries, both in the water operations and in SWF operations due to, you know, having one manager covering both divisions. So we're still showing salary savings in that area and then other staffing occurrences that they've had. As far as capital projects that were completed during this period, that would be the month of October 1st through the end of December. We had the emergency generator that came before your board as emergency backup that was purchased. Again, we have the well pump replacement and the wastewater fund pump replacement, or sorry, the pump at the well site. So an additional item that I have prepared for you is something that was requested through the R&I committee, and that's at the very back of the packet, and it is on page 115, and that is a capital project status report. So we keep getting inquiries in the different committees that there are, and also as staff, we've heard it from the board, just trying to get a handle on, you know, what are all the capital projects budgeted in the year without having to go department by department, fund by fund through all these budget pages, and what are the status of those projects? Are they done? Are they being worked on? Are they just sitting on the shelf? What is really happening? So we all got together and made the list, you know, just a quick one-page list that's easy for everybody to follow, and just made it really simple. Here's the project. Here's what the budget is. Here's expenses through this reporting period, and kind of like where this, you know, what is the status of that project. So this is completely something new. This is our first stab at it. So if there's things that you like on it, things that you don't like on it, it's totally fluid and we can make those changes. So, you know, think about it, talk about it. Finance committee saw it for the first time this past Tuesday. And everybody seemed to be very pleased with it. So hopefully, you know, you guys are pleased as well. And if you want any changes made, we'd be happy to make those changes. So that pretty much concludes what I have to inform you of. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Director Pearson.
Thank you for a wonderful report. Great job. I assume that the Finance Committee approved of this. And I think our work is done here. I recommend we approve this and move forward.
Vice President Steidel.
There was just one comment I wanted to make. The question or the assertion earlier about the tanks costing $80,000, I think on this listing you'll see that budget amount for tank purchase as a budget amount of $80,000. Now, the actual expenses that'll be recorded against that, if I'm not mistaken, is as that moves forward when those tank purchases are paid for, was going to be more around the $18,000 range.
That's correct. Right, and that happened in the month of January. So,
right.
so you'll see that because that happened after this.
The budget was $80,000, and the expense was $18,000. So
right. Yeah,
that's $60,000 plus that was saved for the key district. Thank you.
I just have a quick comment. Under wastewater fund and water fund on page 57, and you've already alluded to this, revenues are greater than expenditures during the second quarter to the vacancies with regard to operations. No staff operation and the utility manager position. So obviously we'd hired a new utilities manager, and I believe you have some new staff on board. So how will that be reflected with regard to revenues outpacing, you know, revenues greater than expenditures in your next report?
So they'll kind of catch up. So when we look at the second quarter report, we're evaluating what has happened in the first quarter, and we make the assumption that whatever happened in the first quarter is going to happen in the first half of the year, the first and second quarters, is going to happen in the third and fourth quarters of the year. So, you know, once those staff get hired, here it is almost the 1st of March, and we still don't have those staff on board. So we still might see significant savings when we're looking at the third quarter report, because the salary for any new collection system workers is still not going to be in the budget. So I think for wastewater, we're still going to see a significant amount of savings in salaries going forward for this year.
All right. Thank you. Yes, Director Rice.
I would just second the motion made by Director Pearson.
Thank you very much. Could we have a roll call, please?
Director Pearson?
Aye.
Director Rice?
With many thanks to Vice President Steidel and Finance Committee, absolutely, yes.
Director Howell?
Aye.
Vice President Steidel?
Aye.
President Farmer?
Aye. Moving on to item 7C, and I'll hand this over once again to General Manager Weigold.
Yes, Mr. President. Agenda item 7C is discussion and consideration to approve draft policy 1042, use of electronic devices during board meetings. The policy committee recommends that the board of directors review the draft policy 1042 and consider adoption of the same. And I'll turn that over to Director Howell for any further comment.
I think we visited this before, so I think you've already heard as much as you need to hear from me. I think the policy stands or falls on its own at this point.
Director Pearson.
I had a couple of things, but you know, they're very incidental. One was in order to avoid violations of the Brown Act, et cetera, to communicate secretly during a public meeting instead of secretly to other board members.
So communicate to other board members?
Yeah, instead of take out secretly and say to other board members.
That's a good catch, because that's the only way it could be a Brown Act violation. And I was going to suggest the same change.
Okay.
I was too.
And then in the last paragraph, a board member wishing to respond. How about needing to respond? Otherwise, I think it's terrific.
Director Rice.
I would actually remove the limitation shall not apply to communications of a personal nature and just leave that last paragraph starting off a board member needing to respond to communications of a personal nature. It's just combining two sentence combining English teacher, sorry. If there's a consensus of the board that that's all right.
I'm not seeing anybody shaking their heads the other way.
And then I also want to be clear that I don't have any problem, because it's not a Brown Act violation, and it actually helps our staff do their job sometimes, to this applying to the board and not to the staff during meetings. And that's not super clear here. I mean, if this is part of a board policy thing, I just want to make sure that it's clear, because I think I've sat in meetings, committee meetings and board meetings, where I know that the general manager or the clerk has gotten a text or a message that has been helpful for getting information to the public and to us.
Right.
So I just want to be clear that this applies to board members and is primarily to prevent Brown Act violations and loss of trust from the community.
Why don't we change the title of the policy a little bit? Use of electronic devices by board members during public meetings, and then, okay.
You may want to strike the "and staff members" in the second paragraph then, because it's not needed.
Thank you. Where's this "and staff members"? Okay. President Farmer, may I? I've been driving the bus here for a minute. May I then have consensus from the board to go ahead and take this back and then bring it back with the changes for final adoption? Is that, or do you want to adopt it with the changes now, I guess?
Yeah, I'd move to adopt the with the changes we just made.
I'll second.
Is there some way, Ms. Madrid, that you could read back to us those changes? Are you able to do that?
Sure. So we have changing the title from policy 1042, use of electronic devices by board members during board meetings.
Public.
During public meetings.
Oh, during public meetings.
So we're striking board and just saying public?
That's what Director Howell had recommended.
Yeah. Okay. Striking "and staff members" in the second paragraph. Changing "secretly" to "with other board members during a public meeting?
With or to?
Two other board members.
Oh, two other board members. And then striking the very last sentence completely.
And then there's one last, a board member wishing, do we want to replace that with a board member needing to respond? So that second sentence on that
Isn't that the last sentence that we're striking?
Not striking the first sentence. Second sentence.
Striking the first sentence.
Yeah, and then second sentence changing wishing to needing.
Okay, so I got that. So striking the first sentence of the last paragraph and changing wishing to needing.
Thank you very much for those clarifications. So could we now have a roll call vote, please?
Okay. Director Pearson?
Aye.
Vice President Stidell?
Aye.
Director Howell?
Aye.
Director Rice?
I believe Director Rice made the second on
no,
that.
No, I didn't. It was Director Stidell.
Oh, my apologies.
With thanks to the Policy Committee and Director Howell, yes.
And President Farmer?
Yes, thank you. Moving on to item 7D, and once again, I'll hand this off to...
Mr. President, I would like to make a motion that we go until...
Oh, thank you for noticing that.
5:30?
Well, considering we also have closed session...
Right.
Why don't we make it 6 o'clock so we don't have to...
I can only stay till 5:30.
Well, in that case, Director Rice, we'll do that till 5:30. Thank you.
We need to have a vote.
Yes.
Ms. Madrid?
Director Rice?
Aye.
Director Pearson?
Aye.
Director Howell?
Aye.
Vice President Stidell?
Aye.
President Farmer?
Aye. Thank you, former President Rice.
Thank you, current President Farmer.
And we are now moving on to... Item 7D and General Manager Weigold.
President Farmer, General Item 7D is discussion and consideration to approve draft policy 1040, correspondence to the board and staff. The policy committee recommends the board of directors review draft policy 1040 and consider adoption of the same. And again, I'll turn that over to Director Howell for leading discussion.
I really don't have much to say on this. It seems fairly straightforward. The only thing I can say is this has been coming back and forth for a while here, so I think this may be the second or third time you've seen this one. I don't know why, but it just has, it seems to me awfully familiar. Just because I'm getting old, maybe. I don't know.
Well, I would move to approve.
Do we have a second?
I would second.
Do we have a roll call vote, please?
I just want to, under discussion, I would like to see us consider who replies if there's an email sent to the entire board. We don't have to have it as part of this policy, maybe 1040.2 or something, because it does talk about if there's a response from the general manager, it should go to the directors. But I that's never been clear since I joined the board. Like, if I get one for myself, that's different than if it goes to the whole board.
Well, isn't there an issue if a director responds and copies all of the other directors? Isn't that an issue? I mean,
right. That's why it would have to be if it's addressed to the board, if it's a letter or an email addressed to the board specifically, it should probably be the president. And that used to be in our bylaws like that, but it's not right now. So
it probably should be explicit. Yeah. So we'll add that as a... Yeah, 1040.2 probably or something.
And probably it should be carbon copied to whoever the vice president is if the president's responding, so there's at least one other board member that knows the communication that went out, which would not be a Brown Act violation.
Carbon copied. For anybody out there under 35 years of age, ask your mom. Could we have a roll call vote on this item, please?
Director Pearson?
Aye.
Director Rice?
Aye.
Director Howell?
Aye.
Vice President Stidell?
Aye.
President Farmer?
Aye. Moving on to item 7E, Once again, General Manager Weigel.
Yes, President Farmer. Agenda item 7E is discussion and consideration of inclusion of a forest fuel reduction survey in our regular billing statement. Staff is recommending that the Board of Directors consider including the attached forest fuel reduction survey with the regular billing statement and direct staff to proceed with mailing the survey to CCSD customers. I believe Director Pearson can further provide some detail on this item.
Yes, this is the item that was in our Cambria Fire Safe Focus Group report. She's going to this is a draft, and she'll have more information on it and everything. But she's asking the community to go out there, and it's going to be a questionnaire, have photos of what healthy forests look like and what has been done here and what hasn't been done here and that kind of thing. And she's just asking us to mail this out for her. The County Fire Safe Council will be paying for the printing and the extra mailing expense. Okay, so it's no fiscal impact at all to the district.
Except for the printing of the survey, right? I mean, it's no. Minor.
No. The printing of the survey will be paid for by the Fire Safe Council.
Okay, excuse me. I see a number of lights on. So, Vice President Steidel.
So, are they going to be sent out enclosed, and then the return is prepaid?
No, they go out to a website. Okay.
That was going to be my second question, if it was something that couldn't be loaded up on the district website and addressed that way. But if there's a separate website, so,
she's going to have a separate website. And like I said, she's going to have pictures out there. And it's kind of the way she explained it was, here are three pictures of what a forest can look like. Which one do you think is a healthy forest? Mm. Just so that it's a test. It's a survey on education possibilities that need to happen, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Director Howell.
It seems like a very good idea. I'm having a hard time finding a reason not to do it. So I think I'd like to move that we approve this.
I'll second.
I just want to make the Director Rice.
My question had been, because I assumed paper surveys, because I'm over the age of 35, and I don't assume automatically it'll be an online survey, but it says we'll share the results with the student, but it sounds like the student is going to get the answers through the website where the survey is. Are we going to get a report back from the student as to...
Yes. A Fire Safe Focus Group is going to get a complete report.
Great.
And then I will bring that to the board. And I'm likely going to ask her to come and actually give us the report, because I think it's going to be very instructive for us.
Thank you.
I don't know if I'm quite understanding this particular situation here, but what we're doing is surveying the community as to... the multiple choice pictures as to what do you feel is a healthy forest?
No, I think it's deeper than that, but I don't know exactly all of what's going to happen, okay? But it's part of her master's thesis to go ahead and do this, okay? Mm-hmm. And there's going to be a bunch of questions in there about...
I understand that. I didn't say it was just one question.
Yeah.
I'm just... wondering something that has been lacking in the community is like a forest manager. Is there going to be anyone that we bring on board? I know that FFRP, the Friends of Fiscalini Ranch Preserve, have hired a forest manager, James Allen, I believe, to take a look at what has happened up on the Fiscalini Ranch and give them a report, you know, with regard to what was done on the ranch on Cal Fire and the folks that they hired. Perhaps that could somehow be included in these results to get a greater understanding of the condition of the forest. Does that make any sense?
Yes, I would. Yeah, that would be her decision to include it in her thing or not, but I'd certainly point out to her that she should contact him, yeah.
Okay. It seems like I'm a little bit off base on what I just said regarding it's just her thesis, so to speak, mm-hmm. And I wish her all the best on that. Anybody that's making it through college and is doing a thesis, two thumbs up. Anyone else have a comment here? So none that I can see. So,
vote.
Are we making a motion here to approve this item? My apologies. And do we already have a second?
Yes.
Ms. Madrid.
Director Howell.
Aye.
Vice President Stidell.
Aye.
Director Rice.
Aye.
Director Pearson.
Aye.
President Farmer.
Aye. It's hard to believe I'm actually supposedly running this meeting. We're now moving on to item 7F, and once again, General Manager Weigel.
Yes, Mr. President. Agenda item 7F is discussion and consideration to nominate a candidate for election to the CSDA Board of Directors, Coastal Network, Seat C. Staff is recommending that the Board of Directors discuss and consider nominating a board member or the general manager for consideration to election to the CSD Board of Directors, Coastal Network, Seat C. Further information is listed on the following attachment.
Is there anyone on this particular board that would wish to be involved with the CSDA? Any comments here? Excuse me, Director Pearson.
I move that we not nominate anyone for this particular seat.
I would second that.
Seems to be a very affirming confirmation in the negative. Ms. Madrid.
Director Pearson.
Aye.
Vice President Stidell.
Aye.
Director Howell.
Aye.
Director Rice.
Aye.
President Farmer.
Aye. It's, I believe we have come to the end of regular business. Do we have any future agenda items to suggest? Seeing none, I'm just going to say that I believe one of the items on the next agenda is going to be regarding streetlights, and it's going to be a fairly encompassing discussion with regard to, and that'll be in March. So seeing no, Director Rice, pardon me.
Oh, no, I just didn't know if there was public comment for closed session, that's all.
Well, we haven't gotten there yet, so. This meeting is adjourned, and now we are moving to closed session, and seeing no one in the audience, I can't understand why, to make public comment on this, we are now adjourning to closed session.
That's agenda item 9.
Oh, pardon me. Thank you, legal counsel.